listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
France finish with a three-goal flurry to book their place at Brazil 2014, as Didier Deschamps' side become the first team to turn around a 2-0 playoff deficit. It's pretty grim viewing for the USA and England, neither side able to pick up a win in their friendlies last night, and particularly at Wembley, a very bad night of football indeed. And it's the King and I. The King comes out on top. Ronaldo's hat-trick, four goals in two legs, sees Portugal blast past Sweden to book their place at Brazil 2014. Welcome to Wednesday's edition of World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Deuce Wilson, bringing you the news and the many views from around the world of football. Joining us a little later on, of course, will be Rafa Gonzalez, as always on the show. Delighted to say as well that we will be talking all things L3 and, of course, US men's national team today, and actually ready and waiting to join us right now on the show straight away kicking off the day is our very good friend to talk all things Mexican football. I'm delighted to say that he's in better spirits as Mexican football has got slightly better than the last few months or so. Joining us here on World Football Daily to talk about it all is Mr. Eric Gomez. Eric, it's a pleasure to have you back on board. It's been a little difficult talking to you in the last few months about Mexican football, mate, but it's nice. World Cup 2014, Mexico are going to be there. How does that feel, Eric Gomez?
It's good news that's worth about $600 million for all of Mexico. So I'd say it's pretty good news. And again, you know, better late than never has probably been the mantra for Mexico this year. And they've definitely come through at the critical moment against New Zealand. And I think that despite a movement for temperance in Mexico in terms of the celebration, it's definitely a relief.
I was going to say it must be a great sense of relief, a big weight off the shoulders of everybody involved really in Mexican football, because they've made life so difficult for themselves, especially in the last 4 months or so. Do you get the feeling that it is just a big sigh coming out of the Mexican camp rather than a hip hip hooray, we're going to Brazil?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that there was, again, outside of those 10 minutes when Mexico were losing 2-1 to Costa Rica and Panama was beating the United States, you know, more so than those literal 10 minutes, there was a pretty extensive period of time where it looked like Mexico was going to miss out on Brazil 2014. And fans were, I mean, getting used to that idea, I'd say reluctantly, but it was very difficult. And to get the opportunity to play against New Zealand was amazing to begin with. They beat them 5-1 at Estadio Azteca, and that really made it so that a lot of the fans regained a little bit of the confidence that was lost in the team, and they move into Wellington. And I thought that this was a very good opportunity for them to really stamp their authority on this intercontinental playoff, which they did. And 3-0 in the first half, and then they end up winning 4-2. So just an absolutely, again, yeah, a sigh of relief for everybody involved, and now they can move forward to 2014 and think about what kind of group they're going to get.
Were there any nerves at all, do you think, going into yesterday's game because of how Mexico so triumphantly reclaimed the Azteca as a fortress, so to speak, in that first leg against New Zealand?
Yeah, there were a bit of nerves, and I don't think it had much to do with New Zealand because, again, their performance had been terrible. And we saw them at Azteca come out without – it looked like they didn't even have a set strategy at times other than defend, because they completely refused to have anything to do with possession. In the first half, they had about 18% of possession. And in the second half, they brought it up to 27%. So it was pretty dull to watch New Zealand out just running behind the ball with Mexico, even when they were down by such a hefty margin. In the second game, I think it had more to do with we had seen such an inconsistent Mexico side for the entirety of the year that there was kind of a sense of doom and gloom that was left over from those performances. And despite the fact that they had a four-goal advantage, there was some nervousness because New Zealand had been very vocal and adamant throughout the week in saying that they would be way more aggressive at home and they would try to make it so that Mexico would have a very difficult 90 minutes. And I think that they were actually pretty good in the first 15 minutes. They were unlucky to concede that goal to Oribe Peralta, but they were absolutely on it. You know, they showed a very different attitude, New Zealand, than the one that they had shown in the first leg. It could have turned out differently for them, but unfortunately for the All Whites, so Oribe Peralta was just on his game.
An unbelievable first half hat trick, as you say there, for Oribe Peralta. He's really found his form in these two games under Herrera. Do you think that's a coincidence, or is it just Peralta has finally kicked himself into gear, regardless of who the manager was? He's finally kind of achieving some top performances for this national side.
You know, Peralta was overshadowed by how badly his team was playing under Chepo de la Torre and under Vucetic, because he actually was the leading goal scorer for Mexico in the Hex, beating out Chicharito in those 10 games. So he had four goals. Chicharito had two. De Nigris had one. Raul Jimenez had that spectacular bicycle kick against Panama. And that's all she wrote. You know, those were all the eight goals for Mexico in those 10 games. Seven goals, and Peralta had three, not four. So he was still the leading scorer. And as we moved into these intercontinental playoffs, he just completely exploded out of the gate. And I think that that had more to do with the frailty of the New Zealand defense, more so than Peralta just getting a huge boost in form over the last couple of months. I think that he's been the same player, and that now teams are starting to recognize his talent and his form, and not so much his potential, because he's been doing this in the Liga MX for years now. And at 29, this is really kind of the perfect moment for him to come across a World Cup. If he's able to continue that form, we'll see most definitely a Chicharito Peralta strike partnership in Brazil. And that's going to be very interesting and very fun for Mexico football fans.
Do you think that will be the case, that Chicharito will be back in this Mexico starting lineup, especially after the way Herrera came and brought in, obviously, a group of players that he very much knows and who know how to play his style of football with the en masse recruiting, so to speak, of the Club America players into this Mexico national team?
Yeah, you said it. I mean, there's really no animosity towards Chicharito or any of the European-based players. Herrera said this over and over again. I'm choosing this group because I'm familiar with this group, and this is an emergency situation. I'm basically playing my club team out there because I know them well, and they're going to play their hearts out, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, he brought in seven Club America players into that starting lineup yesterday against New Zealand. It was the same starting lineup that we saw against the All Whites in Mexico City. And he rounded it out with three players from León, which are doing quite well by themselves as well, and Oribe Peralta, the lone player from Santos Laguna. The arguments that he gave for not bringing in guys like Chicharito were pretty flimsy. You know, you could see past them. He would say, well, you know, it's going to be a very difficult trip for them. It's a long plane ride, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I think that Herrera was mindful of the pressure and the negativity surrounding the performances for these European-based players, namely Chicharito, namely Giovanni Dos Santos. And he decided to give them a break. He said, all right, well, this is the most pressure-packed situation we could possibly think of for you guys. Sit it out. Watch from home. Cheer your guys on. We're going to get you into Brazil. And you're going to be out of the spotlight for a few months. And once we get into Brazil 2014 in terms of the planning, they'll definitely be there. So I think it's interesting to see Chicharito's definitely going to be on that squad, and I would bet that Giovanni Dos Santos is on that squad. It's going to be interesting to see which of those European sacred cows under Chepo are going to hang around for Herrera, because we saw a very interesting shift in the dynamic and in the strategy for Mexico, going from a straight 4-4-2 to a 3-5-2. And that's obviously going to leave some guys out in the cold because they just don't fit the strategy.
That being said, do you think if an emergency situation arises, maybe in the World Cup, there will be another revert to the Club America kind of style that Herrera's brought in and players that he's brought in? Because, as you say, he knows these guys so well. He knows that they can dig him out of a hole if need be at points. And if you're one of these Club America players, do you not start to think, well, you know, we in the difficult situation when the backs were against the wall, it was us that got Mexico to the World Cup. We should be rewarded, but surely with a trip to Brazil.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's going to be very difficult for Herrera to move past when he does deliver his final 23 players. He brought in 10 Club America guys. 7 players started, but there was a total of 10. So that's essentially half the squad. And that's essentially your entire Mexican base for that team. Teams in Mexico are allowed to have 5 non-nationals, 5 foreigners, regardless of where they are. And they actually have 6 because they've naturalized Aquivaldo Mosquera, who's a defender for the Colombian national team. So they have 17 players. But of those 17 players, I would reckon that 7 of those guys are very young prospects that they're bringing along the system. So essentially it's 10 guys that play on a regular basis. And those are the 10 guys that he brought in. Now, as we move along, and I mentioned this before, there are some guys that are going to be considered outside of the Liga MX fold. And even within that Liga MX, you're going to see players like Chaco Jimenez of Cruz Azul, and you're going to see guys from Chivas who suddenly perk up their form, be considered as it should be, because we're still 7 months away. I don't think that these guys can take it that personally if their form suddenly dips and we see other guys take up the mantle and say, you know what, I'm ready for this challenge. It's going to have to do with the strategy. It's going to have to do with their form. But, you know, I still see potentially 5 or 6 of those players making the cut from Club America.
What about Miguel Herrera and your impressions of him, Eric? Because the itchy trigger finger of El Tri's Football Federation, you would have thought, might have been being squeezed once again had he not been able to take Mexico past New Zealand. Do you believe he is the man for the job after three, four managers in the space of 3 months or so?
Yeah, I think he's the right guy at the right time for Mexico. Mexico needed a fiery leader. They needed somebody who would be able to just go in there and spout no nonsense. I definitely believe Herrera was that guy. With Club America over the last 18, it's closer to 2 years now, he's never missed the playoffs. He's imprinted a very specific style of play, and he has actual success. I mean, he won the league title back in May. So it was kind of a coming out party for him. And he took full advantage of the federation, of the situation surrounding the team. And his intent was always to not be considered a guy that's just going to coach those 2 matches. He's been talking about taking the team into Russia 2018. And I think with the instability that Mexico has had over the last few months, he's playing his cards quite well. And 9 goals over 2 games in the Intercontinental Playoff, not to mention 4 goals against Finland. I mean, that's 13 goals in 3 games. I mentioned before, Mexico scored 7 times in 10 games for the Hex. So I don't think that they can be disappointed with his performances, and I don't think that they can be disappointed with the way that he cobbled the squad together in such a short amount of time. Will he be there for Mexico and Brazil? Absolutely. Will he be there beyond? You know, I think that they would be wise to wait. They are going to negotiate a contract with him in the coming weeks. But if I were the Federation, I still think that I wield the power. And I would kind of put a kibosh on giving Herrera 5 years with Mexico, I'd say, all right, take us to Brazil. Let's see what happens. And if you can take us past the group stage, past the round of 16, towards the quarterfinals, which has been Mexico's goal essentially for the last 20 years, then we can talk about a four-year extension.
But does Mexico as a football team, does it need really a feeling of stability around it? Because aside from, of course, from Chepo, who was in charge of 50 games or so for the national team, since 2008, aside from Chepo, there's only been one manager, Sven-Goran Eriksson, who's even made it into double figures. You know, Jesus Ramirez managed only 5 games, and Fran Flores, 3 games, and then, of course, Tenya Vukotic and now Herrera making it 1 and 2 games for them. It's hard if you're a player, isn't it, to turn up at these national camps, and if it's a new manager every time that you turn up, it's hard to feel attached to a system for the international team, something that you do need quite a lot to be able to survive in the international game.
Yeah, and I don't think that you can blame players like Carlos Vela for just outright refusing to play for Mexico because of these kind of quirks, these foibles that go on within the ranks of the directives and the people that are running the sport in Mexico. These are guys, according to Sven-Goran Eriksson in his autobiography, and I completely agree with him, that ask you the simplest and the dumbest questions regarding the sport. He was very, very concerned that he had to respond to more than 10 guys, you know, being the Liga MX owners. They run this in a manner very similar to the NFL, to Major League Baseball, to the NBA, to all the big American sports. And while that might seem like a good idea, you know, it's definitely a good idea for revenue sharing. It's a good idea to get together and talk about topics like free agency and that sort of thing. Is it really a good idea to do that in terms of running a national team? I don't think so. And I think we spoke about this before. You know, it's as if Roy Hodgson would have to respond to Arsenal management and to Manchester United management and Tottenham management. It's ridiculous. Just let the FA do its job. And I don't think that that's been the case in Mexico. You've had too many cooks trying to alter the recipe as we've moved along. And every time that there's a problem, somebody new just kind of grabs hold of the microphone and says, I'm gonna manage the national team in terms of who we have coaching it and who we bring in terms of players. And these are owners. These are businessmen, very successful businessmen who have done quite well over their careers. But they're not football people. And I think that's the biggest problem for Mexico. Once you get people that are not related directly to the sport making decisions, you're going to have a lot of trouble. And Mexico has certainly felt the brunt of that.
Eric, I will ask you on a day like today to not mention Roy Hodgson's name to me, because I'm probably going to end up going off on a tirade later on in the show about this, but I was stuck at Wembley watching that diabolical affair yesterday evening. So English football, international football at the moment, feel free to change it as much as you want. Get 10, 15 people interfering if we can get at least some entertainment out of it. Definitely none of that yesterday at Wembley. But Mexico giving plenty of entertainment to the El Tri fans. Eric, just quickly on the US men's national team's result against Austria last night. It's a big come down, these two friendlies in general for the US men's national team, just because they've been riding such a wave of winning, especially with the Gold Cup and World Cup qualification going so smoothly, really, after what possibly people expected to be slightly shaky in the hexagonal round.
Yeah, but I don't think we can draw too many conclusions out of this result against Austria. Again, it's the same as the game versus Scotland, knowing full well that you would not have a full squad available. Some of your biggest stars are injured or just simply not considered for this game. You know, I think Jurgen Klinsmann deserves a break in terms of who he puts out on the pitch and to try different styles of play for this team as we move along. As you said, they've had such a dominant year in 2013 with the Gold Cup and with World Cup qualifying that you don't want to be complacent, of course, and I don't think that's what's happening here. But you have earned enough street cred to try different things, and we did see a couple of different wrinkles from this Klinsmann team against Austria and against Scotland. So to think that the United States is going to end end 2013 on a sour note, I think, is too much to say. And I saw a colleague of mine, Seth Vertelny, of Goal post the overall record for the United States. And I think that they just lost three or four times in the entire year. And they had a lot of activity this year. So count the Belgium game and count the Germany game as kind of high watermarks in terms of what they did in the friendly arena. But I think what you take home from this 2013, if you're the U.S., is, look, we came back on top. It was a down year for Mexico, but we came back on top in the Gold Cup, and we just absolutely dominated World Cup qualifying. We didn't lose at Azteca. We won out at home, and we've developed several new German-American and Mexican-American stars for the future. So it's a very, very bright future for Klinsmann. And I wouldn't be too concerned over this game against Austria.
And finally, Eric, you mentioned there were obviously have in the last couple of games been some changes to that squad, and it is a depleted yet still still there's some plenty of class in that U.S. men's national team as well at the moment. But has there been anybody that stood out for you that's really muscled their way almost in front of Jürgen Klinsmann and saying, pick me, take me to Brazil next year?
I was very impressed with the attitude that the guys displayed against Panama back in the Hex. And there was a very interesting story that came out of that, and you've surely heard this. Kyle Beckerman was asked by a unnamed Panama player to take it easy, quote unquote. You know, just take it easy. You guys are in the World Cup. Beckerman replied, "This is my World Cup qualification. We're usually on the bench. You know, this is a game for us to say, Jürgen, we're here and we're doing a good enough job to be considered for Brazil." So yeah, there's definitely two or three players that since then, and this is a, you know, no reference to Mexico, but Graham Susi is one of them. Beckerman is another guy. And I definitely think that the number two race for the goalkeeper spot is wide open. I think the United States have an amazing amount of quality goalkeepers right now, and I would love to see Klinsmann rotate some of those players as we move into the 2014 friendlies. You know, Tim Howard has a lock on that spot, but I don't think Tim Howard has another World Cup in him now in terms of age, and U.S. goalkeepers have been pretty prudent about when it's been their time to step back, and I don't see Howard maybe starting in 2018, so this might be a very good audition for those guys that are looking at that World Cup, like Brad Guzan and so forth, to see who's going to take up the mantle.
I think that's who's got our vote here at WFD HQ. Brad Guzan looks set in line to be that new number one once Tim Howard is gone from between the posts. But it's going to be a long time before we see that. But hopefully, Eric, it won't be a long time before we catch up with you again to talk a little bit of Mexican football, a bit of Liga MX, and of course, a little bit of USF football as well, mate. Thanks so much for joining us today, Eric. I'm glad it could be a lot happier note than it has been, that's for sure.
Absolutely. We're all smiles down here. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, Eric. Take care, man, and have a very good rest of the day. Eric Gomez joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Mexico and World Cup qualification and World Cup 2014. Mexico will be there after a resounding thumping of New Zealand over two legs. What, 9-4, I think it was in the end over the two legs. Just, who was worried? I wasn't. I don't think Rafa was. I think Eric might have been at points. No, we debated whether this could be a real stumbling block or not, but Herrera has come in, made some drastic changes in desperate times, desperate measures, and by goodness, they have paid off for the L3 national side, and Herrera will be leading that team to Brazil next summer. Big thanks there to Eric Gomez once again. Delighted to be in better spirits talking to Eric about Mexican football. The last few times we've had him on, it's been a little downbeat talking about their dismal fall and almost qualifying.
Yeah, a little dark for voting.
I almost felt sorry. You know, every time we get him on, it would always be kind of another new manager, Eric, some more losses to deal with. How you doing? And always be kind of like, yeah, you know, it's tough. It's, at least it gives him something to write about, though. You know, keeps these guys in their jobs when teams start floundering around like that. But a big thanks there to Eric once again. Raf, man, I guess we're both sat here licking our wounds a bit today. US men's national team, of course, getting beaten by Austria, as we said earlier. England. I'm asking for my money back. Flat out. Why are you laughing? It's not even a joke. I'm genuinely... genuinely...
I was, you know, I kind of followed that game a little bit, too, so I just kind of... I was like, oh. When Minasaka scored, I just kind of thought, ouch. It had to be, you know, an Arsenal player. And I was like, ah. Oh, it's just... That one really does stink. And it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like Germany were good, which is probably what you're probably complaining about. You know, it wasn't a very triumphant German side.
Germany were terrible. Germany were really poor. Disappointingly poor. Didn't retain ball possession neatly at all. What they did have, though, was they at least had a bit of movement about the place. You know, off the ball, working movement. and that was at least fine to watch. That made them enjoyable to view. I want my money back because I saw England play football. I don't know if it can even be called football if you don't get a shot on target. I really struggle.
When was the last time that happened? I think I read that somewhere, but it's been like years since England have not had a shot on goal at Wembley. That's pathetic. Look, we can talk about the U.S. game, and if you want, I can explain that away for you. I'm not proud of it, Jews, but yeah, that's really bad to not get a shot on goal in your own home stadium. Like,
you're enjoying rubbing this one in on you a little bit here. Right?
It's not, well. See, I don't think I'm really rubbing it in because you know. You don't often get patriotic about your England, so I mean.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not a patriotic guy, and if it had just been England losing, you know, I wouldn't care. It's the fact.
But it's Germany, right?
No, not even that, Raf. Not even that. You know,
and it's in Wembley, and
I hate Wembley. You know, there are three things. I hate the stadium. I genuinely do. I think it's a rubbish, useless piece of.
Hey, where did you sit?
This is my problem here with my evening. Okay, I'm going to tell you, there are three bad things about going to see England play, and not just the football. Okay, the first is the fans. Now, there's going to be obviously a bad apples in every single bunch, but I get off the train down at Wembley, and I'm with a load of friends and stuff, and it's a bit like, yeah, okay, you know, this is going to be a decent evening, at least. You know, we're going to have some beers. Going to watch the. We ended up watching the Egypt game actually before the England game, and then you know, go off to Wembley, enjoy a game of football that should be reasonably competitive, just because of the rivalry between these two teams, and fantastic. And the first thing I hear, I get off the platform, onto the platform, sorry, out of the station, and the first thing I hear is some moron walking down the road going, there were 10 German bombers in the air. And,
oh my gosh.
And I'm like, oh, really? You are the reason why I don't like going to football. You know, like the story about my dad that I told you the other day about him at the Clemson game and whatnot.
Yeah,
it's like that. You know, those sorts of fans are bringing out the World War and all that kind of stuff. You know, we all know it happened, but there's no... How long are we going to ride that as like, you know, abusing them? You know, it's...
Sure.
Is
that all you got? I mean, and if that's all you got...
Well, it really is. You know, the only other thing we've got is 5-1 in Munich. And, you know, joke's on us. Because we're terrible now. And they're fantastic. So that's the first problem we're going to see England. The fans. Second problem is the atmosphere. The atmosphere at England games is so dull. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan of bands at football grounds. I was loving the other night the Portugal for Sweden first leg and the Portuguese band that were playing some classic hits. You know, a bit of I Will Survive was coming from the stands and whatnot. And wow. I love a band that will get you get people pumping. Unfortunately, the England band has about three songs. One of them sounds like a monotonous siren that then gets the crowd blearing like cows mooing in a field. Come on, England. Come on, England. It doesn't... You're not a band if that's the kind of song that you're playing, because there is literally almost no talent to putting four notes together going... It does my head in. Or you've got the slow, monotonous drum just... Dum, 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 England. Which, again, makes the crowd sound like a field...
Like Neanderthals, yeah.
A herd of sheep... Just, or you know,
like
those the, you know those
like,
movies
like
where
school.
You know those
it's
movies.
Like high school.
Well, it's those movies where people kind of have a drug and it takes away, like Equilibrium, and everybody's walking around with like no emotion. It almost makes the fans like that. And if it's not that, the atmosphere is, oh come on, you absolute piece of, like, shouting, swearing, you know. Where are the fun chants? You know, one of the things I love about English football and the Premier League is some of the chants that they've got. You know, the Suarez one off at Anfield. When he gets the ball, he puts it in the net. I just can't get it off. I just can't get it off. He gets a ball and he scores a goal and we just can't seem to get enough. Suarez, Luis Suarez. And you know the Lallana one that Jonathan Liu gave us a rendition of the other day. You know, he jinks to the left, he jinks to the right. Adam Lallana makes Messi look like a distinctly average player. as Jonathan so eloquently put it on the show last week. So
yeah, that's right. That's
so
right.
Why on earth can't we get beyond England? Dun, 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 England. Come on, England. Come on, England. I mean, I got to the point where I was so bored of not only what was going on the pitch, but with the atmosphere and the fans, that, you know, I started doing the, come on, England, play some football. Let's get better. Can we go home? You know, just because I've left one football game early, Raf, and last night I got so close to doing it again. You know, Mertesacker scored. I went straight. I'd become so bored of that first half. I needed to go to the loo anyway. 10 minutes to go before half time.
You were like, should I just keep walking?
I'm just, yeah. You know, what am I really getting out of this? I'm not seeing any quality football from either side, unfortunately. But the final thing as well that I hate about going to see England is Wembley. I can't stand the place. It's a disastrous stadium in that, look, the facilities, I'm sure, I know, are wonderful. You know, the number of bars, the number of restaurants, areas to shop, all that kind of stuff, great. But the inside of that stadium is, you are so far away from the pitch. My seat was the second to back row at Wembley Stadium, and I paid £36. You know, about $50 for that seat.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be paying $50, £36, for a seat on the back row of a near 100,000-seater stadium. What the other thing is that I was really kind of hacked me off about it. It's not because, you know, that's your choice. You pay for a cheap seat or the cheapest seat available. You end up at the back row. I don't really have a problem with that, and it's nice to be able to watch the game spread out. The trouble is that I've been almost on the back row of the Bernabeu before, and because it's so steep, you feel right on top of the game. You feel like you're almost overlooking the crossbar. You know, it's insane to be that kind of steep and that high up overlooking a football pitch. At the bottom tier of Wembley, though, unfortunately, it goes back at about a 3-degree angle for about 50 yards or so. Not only that, but the front row of that bottom tier is a good 20 yards or so from the pitch all the way around. Now, there's no running track there. There's nothing that means that you can't be like at Old Trafford, almost sat on the touchline when you're in that front row at Old Trafford. You're so close to, especially behind the goal, you almost feel like you could reach out and touch the keeper. And in the same way, even, you know, the San Siro, you're quite far away from the if you're on that front row and the bottom tier, but because it's so steep behind you, everybody else feels like they're right on top of that. And at Wembley, it's not that. It goes back so far and at such a kind of mellow angle that you feel miles away from the game, from the atmosphere, and it's just, it's so ugly. You know, you take that arch off it, and suddenly you're just looking at a really bland bowl, really bland as well. There's no unique character to it except a stupid arch, a pointless
could be
arch.
Worse,
but that arch provides
worse.
Nothing. You think how much money they spent on putting in a giant arch.
I kind of like the arch.
What does it do? I would rather have had a roof that could close properly rather than and built a proper dome, you know, with a retractable roof, than put some stupid ass arch. Look, there was a really nice moment last night walking along to the ground, and the arch was all lit up. It was a really kind of clear wintry night. You got that chill, but also you had a big, like, huge full moon just above the arch. And you know what, if I had a really good camera, unfortunately the camera on my mobile phone doesn't work, but if I'd had a really good camera, like an SLR camera or something like that, would have been a fantastic shot to have of through the shops and the houses with the arch poking between them with the full moon. That's beautiful. But I tell you, on a grainy Sunday afternoon when you go and, say, watch the NFL there on maybe an FA Cup final day or something like that, that arch doesn't do anything at all. It just looks stupid. It makes the whole thing look like a giant shopping basket. So those are the three things that aren't to do with the football that I hate about going to watch England. And then you throw in the fact that you had to watch that game last night. No shots on target from England. Rooney's, bless him, you know, he's trying his hardest, but he's got nothing around him. Daniel Sturridge, absolutely appalling. I mean, disastrous, that boy. Got no clue last night against Germany. And Steven Gerrard, you know, I've worked out, Steven Gerrard looks like he's operating the show because he stands in the centre circle and waits for the ball to come back to him and then kind of fires a pass left or right. But really, he's not really pulling the strings in that way. He's not beckoning people forward. He's not moving kind of the play around and calling out stuff. He's just there.
He's not so much a general. He's just a glorified face in the midfield that you know, moves play along whenever it comes through him.
Glorified sweeper, really. That's what he is. Sure. Tom Cleverley, you know, I've still got questions about him. Whether
a midfield sweeper, that's all.
Yeah. Adam Lallana, a decent performance from him, I have to say. I was reasonably impressed by Lallana. What was a terrible night.
A little bit of a promise from,
Andros Townsend, again, you know, he's trying things, but he's just not quite good enough to pull them off, really. That's one problem about it. And Kyle Walker had an absolute shocker. You know, if you're somebody like Kyle Walker, why are you not going bombing down on the overlap of Andros Townsend? Because Townsend loves to get towards the 18-yard box and then cut inside. If you then have Walker on the overlap, stretching that play down the right flank, suddenly you kind of got German defenders moving left, right and centre trying to pick up the streaking forward men. Unfortunately, nobody moves off the ball for England. I mean, it's horribly, horribly static. And Kyle Walker seems to be doing that as well. Ashley Cole had a poor game, you know, gave the ball away on numerous occasions. And to be honest, that was difficult because Germany made it hard for England to keep the ball. England dominated that for possession. But when they have possession, England just looks so scared about having a football at their feet. Whereas the Germans, the little possession that they had, look composed, look, trying to find interesting ideas. There's off-the-ball movement. There are the odd easy outlet option. And it really was just, you know, a sloppy performance from them. And their B team at that, you know, Westermann, Schmelzer, Bender, not guaranteed spots in that German starting 11. That's sure. You know, Max Kruse up front, is he going to be the man leading the line for Germany, do you think, in the World Cup? It very easily couldn't be. You know, Toni Kroos, Marco Reus, and Mario Götze. It's a cracking front three.
Do you think that maybe Germany should be worried about their depth, or?
No, not at all. I mean, let's get one thing clear. You know, they still, even though they gave away the ball a lot and had a poor night, they still played England off the park. And partly, a lot of that is because England are useless. Let's not beat around the bush. Let's start using terms like that. They were useless. But partly because, you know, this is the B team. But this B team, it can beat England at Wembley on a night when they're supposed to be up for it. And and when they're having a bad night, they can get a result against a shoddy England side. You see how I corrected myself there? Shoddy English side at Wembley. I think this B team can provide a great amount of depth for the A team. And it's still solid all the way through. You know, having somebody like Weidenfeller, who has been a little sketchy at times this year, but even having somebody like him as a backup to Neuer, you know, it's fantastic. Joe Hart as well. He has no idea when to come out for a ball that's played long towards a bouncing long ball towards his goal. He has no idea when to stay and when to go. Completely clueless. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be okay with this World Cup. I know I said I've got a horrible feeling that England will win it, but I tell you what, if they play like that, there's not a hope in hell of us getting
it. It's not going to happen.
We're not going to get out of the group stage. Whoever we've got, doesn't matter. You throw us in with that USA, Algeria, Slovakia group, you know, and we'll still struggle. USA could probably end up tearing us apart. However, Raf, I know we touched on it with Eric Gomez, but I want to share the misery with you today. By the way, what's happened with Belgium? Another loss, this time to Japan in their friendly yesterday. There were some odd results last night. Let's not beat around the bush. South Africa beating Spain. And it's not a terrible Spain side. You know, Sergio Ramos, Monreal's in there, Arbeloa, Xavi Alonso's in there, Iniesta, Llorente, Pedro, David Villa. It's not a bad front three. And yet South Africa, again, it's only a friendly, so probably not too much to worry about there for Spain. I think if they get to the World
Cup. Hey, that's a massive result for South Africa. Congratulations to them.
Yeah, let's give them some props.
I remember how much it meant to everybody else, all the other Americans, especially Casey Kiernan, when we beat Spain on that Confederations Cup.
He never shut up about that, really, did he?
That was so irritating, man. He still talks about it. I swear to God, to this day, if you ever see him, he'll probably bring it up. But you know, I mean, and my excuse was simply that it was bound to happen because Spain had been on some sort of crazy win streak. They had to give it up at some point. talking about the Austria game, Juice. My general summation is that we ultimately played down to this competition. I was somewhat impressed sometimes by the way that Austria were able to move play forward. There was some nice linkage play, you know, from the Austrians. But ultimately, you know, a lot of the final service into the box and a lot of like the finishing was just poor. It was recognizably lower level than world class, right? And that's kind of what I'm looking for, I guess, whenever I'm like looking. Well, I'm myself, Juice, prepped for the World Cup. I want to see World Cup play right now. I'm so excited for it. When I think of World Cup, I think of world class. And I think that's what the US will be facing. So, you know, I think Austria was, you know, it shouldn't have been such a stressful game for us. You know, we shouldn't have been under this much pressure. I think we should have won this game handily. And we did have several opportunities. I think we even hit the bar once or twice. But I don't think that, you know, if you looked at our finishing, if you looked at, you know, Josie's touches and stuff too, you know, I just don't think that we were all there. We were distracted a little bit. And the reason why we were distracted is because we kind of knew we weren't under any real pressure at that point. Nobody's shouting for the heads of our manager right now. Nobody's saying, you know, oh my gosh, do we need to completely revamp this U.S. men's national team squad because they're losing and just failing all over the place. You know, we've had a little bit of a run of success, and with that came, you know, just a little bit of relaxation heading into these last two games. And
it's complacency
a little bit. And it's also, it could be these guys kind of knowing, well, look, you know, I'm pretty sure I got a ticket, you know, to Brazil with this squad. I just don't want to mess up things too bad. I don't want to get injured. And, you know, it could be a lot of things, Juice. And I think that is a little bit of a distracted game for the Americans last two games.
It's world class is definitely something that sums up the World Cup when you think of the players that should be going. Obviously, and I want to touch on this in a second, by the way, Raf, Zlatan against Ronaldo, and Ronaldo just doing heaps towards his Ballon d'Or.
Before we get too far away out of CONCACAF stuff, Mexico, New Zealand, I actually woke up a little bit early, Juice, just so I could watch these goals. And I don't know if you've got to catch any of it or if you've known any of the results or anything like that, but your boy, Jeremy Brockie, did not keep his WFD bump going into this game. He actually had a penalty shot attempt that was a miss. So he could have scored against LT, but pero no, amigo, no dice. He completely missed it. And just in general, Mexico? It should still be a little bit worried, a little bit suspect in defense. They gave up two penalties and let in a third, obviously way late in the game. But and the game was well over. But just I don't know.
Well, we did say Mexico had already booked their place.
Rafa Marquez held back line, man, and I can't trust that man. I just can't trust that man, even though he has my name.
Fair enough. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. There's plenty of Olivers I don't think I've been able to trust. I can't name them off the top of my head. But
hey, I was going to ask you: has there ever been like a Wilson on Sheffield Wednesday?
Not that I can recall. No, I remember Clive Wilson playing for Tottenham when I was growing up, but no chance of him being related.
There's a Gonzalez on the Dodgers right now, but he spells with the Z. But you know, I don't know. I just I would love to. I've always loved the idea of having, like, you know, my name, a legit Gonzalez, you know, and number for a team, and rocking that all over town and being a Gonzalez. I just thought that'd be kind of cool. So, it made me think, man. Just made me think. That's all.
Just quickly, Raf, because we do need to touch on Zlatan against Ronaldo. Disappointment, because we have wrapped up the qualifying now for the World Cup. Mm-hmm. Burkina Faso. Unable to do it against Algeria last night. Been giving him so much love this week as well.
It's probably because I flopped off of Algeria, I think.
Yeah, you twisted the football god's fate. And Algeria with a 1-0 win against Burkina Faso, which means they're going through along with Ghana, who survived against Egypt. It was a very tall order for Bob Bradley. So I actually watched this game. It was reasonably entertaining. You know, I can't fault Egypt that really threw everything they had at them for the final 15 minutes or so in a vain, desperate attempt to pull back after being 6-1 down after the first leg. Egypt, though, unable to. Bob Bradley's side winning 2-1 yesterday. Not enough to get them into the World Cup. And, of course, Raf, the European friendlies. What can you say about... the European... games. We touched on it at the beginning of the show. For the French, first and foremost, what an incredible, incredible comeback. First team to be 2-0 down after a first leg and to come back and to win 3-0 in emphatic
fashion. Is it incredible,
though? Yeah.
I mean, I find it very credible. I mean, it's very French for me. I don't know. Yeah, like, maybe they look, the French are a very talented team, Juice. They should have... I mean, England can go to Ukraine and get some sort of result.
Oh,
France,
that is a low
blow.
France
should be able to dispatch of the Ukraine fairly easily. And no discredit to the Ukraine, a very talented squad. But honestly, like, you know, the French have just depths upon depths of talent and pools of talent that they can kind of draw players from. And I mean... Really, Juice. I wasn't surprised. I was almost expecting it. Yes, it was kind of nicely timed out to make it thrilling or enthralling to watch and wonder if you're going to do it. But I didn't care. I wouldn't have cared if France did not make it. I know a lot of people were saying you know, it would be a sad tournament without Ribéry, especially, but generally a lot of the French talent. But again, I'm going to be so upset, Juice, if something like South Africa happens and there's a bust up in the dressing room and things like that. It's just, it's ridiculous. I would rather see the Ukraine go if that were the case. I'm going to be thinking that if that happens.
Not at all. I would much rather see the France side that we saw last night turn up to the World Cup. And really,
yeah, well, we'll see if that France side shows up though. To the World Cup. We'll
It's a big question. As we said with Ian Holeman the other day, you know, it's tough to get them to that dressing room to unite, especially at big tournaments, and not have any controversy. There might be controversy if Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't win the Ballon d'Or this year. A hat-trick in Portugal's most important game of the year. Really, Raf, what can you say about this guy? You know, scores a cracking strike to open the scoring. Zlatan bags two, and suddenly you're thinking Sweden might pull this one off here. You know, Zlatan's on fire. They've 2 goals in 4 minutes, you know, suddenly everything, the momentum of that game completely swinging into Sweden's favour. And just as you're tempted to think, wow, they might pull this off, Ronaldo goes and bags two, completes a hat-trick. This boy, what can't he do? I mean, everybody says you have to do it on the international stage, which I don't buy in any way, shape or form. I don't buy that for Messi or Ronaldo to be up there with the likes of Pele and Maradona, that they have to win a World Cup or something like that. Because winning a World Cup is not just about one individual player. It's about the whole team around you. And unfortunately for Ronaldo, Portugal are a very hit and miss side when it comes
literally
to
a generation
international
of football.
Like, they had the glory days of you know, Nuno Gomes, Rui Costa, Luis Figo, Shimao, but...
You're getting that accent down. It's a Portuguese accent. Well done. Well played.
But you know, now, look, Nani, I don't know about Nani. It's so hit and miss. He's very lucky to have someone like Moutinho. There's no real out and out starter in that striking role. You know, Postiga, Almeida last night. Morelles, I think we've seen the best of him, to be honest. And that back four, as we were saying yesterday, you know, always seems to look shaky. So Ronaldo doesn't have to win a World Cup or anything like that with Portugal to show that he's arguably one of the best players of all time. He just needs to keep putting in performances like he did last night. When the chips were down, when the backs were against the wall, Portugal turned to him and he delivered. And he delivers time and time again for club and country.
Was that 30 minutes of football? I mean, because really, 30 minutes of football, really. Was that 30 minutes of football worth, you know, going through that the first match?
Oh yeah.
I mean, that, yeah. I was.
Football pays you back. Football pays you back in those ways.
Yeah,
it?
Totally. It definitely felt like a almost like a heavyweight bout kind of going on. Like the lights kind of came on, you know, and it just felt like, you know, it was the story that was built up. It was these two giants of football, these personalities, these talents, literally going head to head and kind of, oh, you did that, I'll do this, I'll one better you, I'm going to respond and kill it. And well done to Ronaldo. I mean, yeah, this is, like you said, this is the kind of performances he needs to put in to really kind of, you know, just assure his place in history. I mean, because, you know, he does kind of, well, it's tough for him on the international stage. Like you said, the supporting cast just isn't necessarily there. I mean, if he was Brazilian juice, God. Or if he was French, if he was, you know, think of some of the teams that, you know, if he was just on, like, it would just, they would completely dominate. If he was Spanish, wow.
Oh, my goodness. Seriously. If he was Spanish, I think you'd just be scared to death, wouldn't mm-hmm. you? You'd be absolutely trembling. Sure.
So, I mean, man, if he was Spanish, I wonder how that would affect some of those Ballon d'Or results.
And they've extended the Ballon d'Or voting deadline as well for this year. So it's just more time for Ronaldo to kind of start, you know, banging in the goals and reminding everybody exactly why he should be given it this year. Obviously, Ribery, but Ronaldo's making a very good, very always does.
Sure. My last question of the show, Juice, I have to ask you is, after that 30 minutes of football, especially after that two-legged affair, are you going to be okay with not having Zlatan in the World Cup?
No. Okay. I was desperate for Zlatan to be in the World Cup. That's the one thing. You know what? That's another thing, by the way, that makes me dislike last night's England game even more, is the fact that I missed watching that live because I was at the bloody England game getting bored to death. sorry, I've got, there's so much pent up frustration about that game last night. Is unbelievable. No, Zlatan, I really wanted to see, you know, it's his last chance probably to ever go to a World Cup, and you want to see a player like him. I mean, ideally you'd take both, wouldn't you? You'd want Portugal and Sweden to be there. But there's plenty of big names that aren't going to the World Cup, unfortunately. Yeah, you know, you think about Ibrahimovic, of course, and I love how he said, "Oh, the World Cup will be a lesser tournament because I'm not there." I mean, you get knocked out, and what do you do? Hey, I don't care. I'm freaking Zlatan Ibrahimovic. You guys are missing out because of that idiot over there. Just put me out of the World Cup. You guys won't be laughing too hard when you suddenly realise that you're missing me next summer. So Zlatan, obviously, ever the confident, as always. But think as well, Lukas Piszczek and Robert Lewandowski, obviously not going because Poland didn't make it past England or Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Gareth Bale probably will never make, unfortunately, because he's Welsh. As with Aaron,
it's called the Ryan Giggs syndrome.
yes. Also known as, why didn't you make yourself eligible for England? come on, we all think it, really. You know, obviously, Aaron Ramsey as well joins that list. I mean, if he continues, it's going to be pretty sad. Dortmund's Mkhitaryan, Alaba of Bayern Munich as well. Christian Eriksen obviously won't be there. Thomas Rosicki won't be there. Jovetic, Vukinic, you know, Ivanovic, Marek Hamsik. You know, there's some pretty, obviously Yarmolenko as well. There's some pretty big names that won't be going.
That's a pretty powerful list you're rounding up there, Juice.
I mean, that's the kind of team that you would like to, you'd like to see kind of playing. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
With like Cisse, Demba Ba, you know, I know they're not the greatest, but, you know, they won't be there because obviously Senegal.
They were my fantasy league at one point.
Senegal didn't make it, you know. Adebayor won't be there. I mean, obviously no big loss with Adebayor. He's not even playing for Tottenham. But still, these are high-profile names that won't be going to the World Cup. So when Zlatan thinks, oh, no, I can't believe I'm not going, there are plenty of other big stars that I think the world would like to see on the grand world stage, so to speak, of the World Cup. Raf, do you really think that it's better to have Ronaldo there?
I do. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and also primarily I think because he's a little bit more media friendly. I bet you, you know, he's Nike's star, Juice. I mean, Nike will do more through Ronaldo for the World Cup. And that's, I mean, that might be a really kind of sad way of looking at it, but
that is really sad way of looking
I also believe that Ronaldo is a very talented man and obviously showed in his performance. That was an incredibly impressive performance. And I really would love to see somebody say that that's not worth putting his team through to the World Cup. I think he definitely rose to the occasion and outperformed over the two legs. He essentially scored all four goals for his squad in this back-to-back affair. And that's beyond impressive for me. In the battle of Zlatan versus Cristiano, I think he laid the knockout punch. And trust me, I love Zlatan. I love him. He is a hero to me. I would much rather follow Zlatan Ibrahimovic than Cristiano Ronaldo. But, I mean, you cannot deny what Cristiano Ronaldo did. And, again, that is the kind of performance that he needs to do to just generally solidify his spot in the annals of world football history.
Oh, geez, Raf, why don't you just go vote for him for your Ballon d'Or award already? You know?
I would. You know what?
Is that your vote?
I'm thinking about jumping off the Ribery bandwagon just to hand it to Ronnie.
I think it's unfortunate when Ronaldo does things like last night. It completely puts it in perspective. You know, Ribery was an incredible year, absolutely magnificent for Bayern, winning a treble as well. You know, awesome.
Yep.
But one on one, who's better, Ronaldo or Ribery? Who would you rather have in your side? And every time it's Ronaldo. Whether that's enough to win a Ballon d'Or, you know, there's the credential of being the greatest player ever or the greatest player of 2013. And whether Ribery was a better player in 2013 than Ronaldo is what the Ballon d'Or voting will be about. It's a tough choice. It's going to be very, very tough indeed. We'll leave you to mull over that one. I'm sure we'll continue mulling on that until the new Ballon d'Or winner is announced in January. But for now, we do know that Zlatan won't be at the World Cup. Ronaldo will be. As will France too. An incredible night of football, unless you're at Wembley Stadium last night. Take care. Have a very good evening, and we will catch up with you at the same time tomorrow when we start looking ahead to a big weekend of football. The Midlands Derby and the Liverpool Derby coming up, Raf. The Premier League just keeps throwing the big games at us. Take care. Have a good one. We'll see you at the same time.